For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Welcome to episode 180 of MSR Cast, the Metal Podcast. What's up, man? I am Kerry. I am one of your hosts.
I'm Sean. I'm the Metal Pigeon. I'm your other host.
I am the Metal Geek. I forgot to say that shit.
I noticed that.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the show with nothing but brand new music this episode.
Yes. Nothing but 2016 brand new music.
That's true. There, what is it, February? Not even the middle of February yet, and there's so much music to go through.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a lot. It's nice, though, because it's been a lot of surprises. Stuff that bands that I thought kind of were on the decline who have kind of rebounded, and then stuff that just kind of came out of nowhere and surprised the heck out of me.
What band are you talking about that rebounded?
Well, I think the bands that rebounded, the first one that I'm thinking of is Avantasia. I'm also thinking of, this is kind of my own thing, but kind of Serenity, rebounding from the loss of two key members, I think. And then the band that surprised the hell out of me was Megadeth.
Yeah.
With an album that is maybe the best Megadeth album since 1994.
Oh. I mean, some harsh words.
Well, I mean, I'm a Megadeth fan who has found something to love about almost every album.
I think my last good Megadeth album was maybe United Abominations.
I think it was a good album.
It was good, but it wasn't great.
I think System Has Failed was a near great album. I think the Dystopia is a great album.
Dystopia is a great album.
It's just like, you know what it is? It sounds like raw and kind of like, it does sound sort
they're
of
revitalized.
Unstable. It sounds unstable. And I think it revitalizes the best word because is Megadeth a band where they need to have new members come
apparently,
in?
Apparently.
Kind of kick them in the gear, you know?
Everybody, if you listen to metal, you know who's in the band now. So you got Kiko Loureiro from Angra. And then you have some drummer. What's his name? Chris Adler?
I think some guy.
What band is that? Lamb of God, I've never heard of them before.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to get anywhere.
Kiko is a huge factor in why that album sounds so good. I'm not going to, it'd be juvenile to compare him to Marty Friedman, and I don't think it really should, but.
As we record this, we're missing Marty Friedman, by the way.
Yeah, I know, I was thinking about that just now, but anyway.
That's how metal we are.
I think that he's found, I think that Kiko basically playing alongside another talented guitarist in Angra for so many years, I think he understands how to listen to that guy's style and play off of it. Whereas maybe Marty was just kind of being Marty in Megadeth, and they had some great results because the styles are so kind of, they work so well together because they clashed off each other.
Yeah,
I think Kiko works better because he knows how to bounce off Dave better.
And I've listened to some interviews with Dave recently, with Dave Mustaine. He's really into this lineup of the band, even though Chris Adler it's not a full-time member of the band. He can't commit because of Lamb of God.
Yeah.
But he mentioned that their touring drummer when Adler can't be there is Tony Loureiro. Who was in Nile and a bunch of amazing fucking bands.
Yeah.
Demi Borgir. So, I mean, he's like got a fucking great extreme drummer that could do that shit.
Yeah, they're going to be fine on the road. Yeah. I mean, with them, it's more about like, no one ever questioned the value of a good Megadeth show. I mean, they've been a good, consistent live band.
I was looking forward. They're coming here in a couple weeks, and I really wanted to go to the show. It's Havoc, who I like Havoc a lot.
Yeah.
Next band, I can't say that I like that much anymore, Children of Boredom.
That last album was good, though.
And then Suicidal Tendencies is on the tour, but I don't think they're playing Houston.
That's weird.
That's a really big deterrent for me.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to seeing them.
Yeah.
But
I'm still on the fence about that show, whether I'm going to go or not.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Back to Megadeth.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just like the current political climate that's making this kind of Dave come out. Because like, album fires in all cylinders. He has this sort of pissed off edge about him. And that song, A Post-American World.
Yeah, that is a good song.
First of all, the title of the song, I think, I don't know if he's actually referencing just like an idea that's out there, I think there was actually a book called The Post-American World or something like that. Anyway, I could just be talking out of my ass. I know I've read things about the post-American
world. We've mentioned the Megadeth album when Dave was on here last time. We talked about some of the songs and the riffs and stuff, how much it sounds like Rust in Peace.
Yeah, but to me, there's an edge to this album that sounds a lot more like Countdown, like Sweating Bullets type stuff, especially like The Threat Is Real and Dystopia. I don't know, just so I was
there's a couple
pleased.
Songs on here that are pretty clunkers though, like The Emperor, talking about like the line The Emperor has new clothes or whatever the fuck it is.
I kind of like that. That is very much Dave Mustaine though.
I know, but it's
Dave Mustaine.
It's that songwriting style of. I'm going to rock and roll all night and party every day, repeated for fucking a minute and a half.
Okay, yeah, okay. So the repetition bothers you.
Yes. I hate repetition in songs.
I don't mind repetition in songs. It just has to be, like a purpose to it. Like if you hate repetition in songs, then you would hate Doro Pesch's, you know, All We Are, which is based off this, you know. That chorus is just nothing but repetition.
Then I would probably hate it.
No, come on. It's a great song.
I don't know.
Triumph for Megadeth, because no one expected this album to be this good, especially coming off Super Collider.
So, top 10, maybe?
It's definitely in their top.
I listen to it a lot. That says something, right?
It's definitely in Megadeth's best. It's going to be in their top five, I think, for me.
Okay, let's play this game then. Uh-huh. Top five Megadeth albums.
Rust in Peace.
Agreed.
I'm going to say Countdown to Extinction. That album was big for me.
Yeah, agreed.
I'll put Euthanasia somewhere in there, but maybe at number four. I'll put Peace Cells at number three. Number five is a wild card, but I'm going to say Cryptic Writings.
Really?
Yeah, but then I think this one might be edging out Cryptic Writings, because I would
say so.
Yeah, but Cryptic Writings was like one of those albums where it's like, yeah, the band is experimenting and all the experiments are working.
And nobody can disagree with Rust in Peace being number one. I think it's top five albums of all time. It's there too.
Yeah,
for me at least.
There's certain albums I think for Megadeth where I think they're overrated. Like Killing Is My Business. Mm. I do enjoy it just because I'm a Megadeth fan, but it's not their. It's not in the top five. So Far, So Good, So What? Not
the re-release
in the top five.
Is bad. Of Killing Is My Business when he re-recorded it.
Oh, a couple. Yeah, it was like 10 years ago. Yeah, it wasn't that good. I agree with that. I mean, the worst. What's the worst Megadeth album? Is it Super Collider or The World Needs a Hero?
Or Risk?
I don't think so. I honestly think World Needs a Hero is worse than Risk.
I don't remember World Needs a Hero.
That's right. There's a reason why.
There you go.
It was the worst. It came out in 2001 and it was like...
Name one of the singles from that.
The single was Motopsycho.
Okay.
Yeah. God awful song.
Yeah.
Risk at least was like them basically...
Which album was Trust?
Cryptic Writings.
Cryptic Writings, okay.
I liked all the stuff they were
and
trying to
Trust Them or whatever song that was.
Crush 'em was on Risk, was okay. A single for Risk, which they wrote for like a hockey team, like the Phoenix had a hockey team. I don't know if they still do or not. Anyway.
New Megadeth, go get it. Go to Best Buy and get the VR version.
I do recommend the Megadeth album. I'm surprised that I'm saying that, but I, especially after Super Collider, which was so bad that we didn't even talk about it on this podcast.
I think we
mentioned it like once and that was it.
So what else have you been up to, man?
I've been listening to just anything that came out. I've been listening to like, just, I don't know, just tons of new music. It's been a relief just to listen to new 2016 releases and, you know, write about them. I put up a review for Avantasia's Ghost Lights.
Yeah.
Which is a just titanic.
You jerked it off a little bit?
Amazing album. Probably. Yeah. Probably didn't even realize.
Well, I love you, Avantasia.
That album.
No, I enjoy that album a lot too.
It's funny because John, who's a big black metal, death metal fan, I gave him the album, just like, hey, check this out. He loves it.
Yeah,
he loves really? How just how crazy, diverse, and fun it is to listen to. Like every, you know, the song's got punchy choruses and things that make you remember. To me, the album is like a triumph in the sense that it's the first perfect album that he's written.
I wonder if George from Metal Geeks Podcast would like it.
Oh,
maybe
no.
He'll hate it.
He would hate it because he already hated what he was hearing.
Yeah, he did.
which is fine.
But he's allowed to have the wrong opinion. Yeah. That's all right.
It's the best album he's written since Mandrake for Ed Guy.
Really?
I wrote it, so? In my review, I kind of was like tracing back some of the history and talking about how he had a run in the early, during the power metal glory days, where he would just release album after album after album of perfection, like no bad songs, no bad songs. This is the first album that Tobias Sammet has written where there's not a bad song on the album since 2001. That's 15 years where he's been kind of, you know, getting there but not quite, or releasing albums that are mediocre, or releasing albums that are almost on the edge of being bad, you know? And I think when the guest list was announced for this album, like last year, we were talking about it on the podcast.
Right, I remember. Point,
and I was kind of unenthusiastic about it, hearing guys like Jeff Tate and Dee Snider, and thinking about my reaction to The Mystery of Time, which was released in 2013, and thinking that how that album disappointed me on such a level that I felt
that
like...
That album was very happy and poppy.
Well, I think that the album was... It was like... It was almost like my... He brought in the symphony orchestra for that album, made it this lush production, but the songs he came armed with weren't meant for that production. They were still kind of hard rock type songs.
Let's talk about some of the... guest stars that are on this album, guest vocalist. I gotta say, when Michael Kiske and Tobias Sammet and Jorn Lahn are together on a song,
title track,
it's pretty fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, it's stunning. Yeah,
Michael Kiske he's one of my favorite vocalists.
And Tobias seems to know how to write for Kiske.
He knows how to write, he knows how to harmonize with him. It's great.
Freaking Wastelands, which was on the Wicked Symphony.
Yeah,
which was a Kiske track. This one, then that was a brilliant track. Ghostlights, the actual song itself, which has Kiske on it, has the same almost pattern to it. But Sammet understands how to write for him in a way that like maybe the guys in Helloween never understood. Michael Kiske is a vocalist who's always going to sing slower than the music around him. He's a slow enunciating vocalist. He's not a speedster.
Right.
When he does do speedster stuff, it's in the context of like Helloween or something. It sounds good, but you're not getting the best use of his voice. But when you listen to the verses on this song, it's like he's going one speed and like the music is going super fast around
him. Yeah, like
and the dichotomy
the
works.
One, yeah, exactly. The one album he did, The Past in Different Ways, where he took old Helloween songs and slowed them down and made them his own. He was perfect on that album.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Kiske sounds good when he's just allowed to croon and do whatever he wants to do naturally. And what's great about Sammet is he understands that, and he instinctively knows how to write for him. I mean, even listen to the stuff on the first Metal Opera album that he was on. I mean, he's in tune with that guy. Like, that's the perfect songwriter for Michael Kiske.
And like Dee Snider from Twisted Sister is on this album, right?
Yeah, it sounds phenomenal too.
You don't recognize him because it's totally different than his wheelhouse.
Well, it's different for him. I also think that part of that was on me. I haven't really listened to stuff that Dee's been doing, or if he's been doing anything at all.
And Jeff Tate, I did not hate. Hey, that rhyme.
Jeff Tate was like one of the stars of the album on that cut.
So apparently when Jeff Tate is not writing for himself, he's still good.
Well, Jeff Tate doesn't pretty much write for himself anyway now with that band he has these two goofballs write for him. They're awful, god awful.
But they're probably Yes Men.
They are Yes Men, yeah. Kelly Gray and Randy Gain or whatever. Whatever
you want, boss. Yes, we'll write that for you. Yeah, what do you want? You want it to sound like shit? Okay, we'll do that.
So Tobias Sammet wrote a song, Seduction of Decay?
Yeah.
And he was hearing this voice in his head, like, this chorus, like, who would sound good on these verses or something? And he's heard Jeff Tate's voice in his head. And he tried for a while to get him in there, and he finally got him to do it. Jeff Tate loved the song. And, like, the way he wrote those verses, like, he wrote it without Jeff Tate in mind. So when he was, like, listening to this playback of the demo, he's like, it sounds like Jeff Tate would sound really good in there. So, like, he also has a good ear for identifying, like, okay, I've written this song. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. That guy can make it better. You know, this voice can make it better. It's like it was kind of a gamble going after Jeff Tate. He's not stupid. He's not, he's not ignorant of the fact that people hate Jeff Tate or that people think he's a shit singer now, or, you know, all the problems that Tate has, the kind of speak singing that he tends to do in his albums these days on the last couple of Queensrÿche albums, but when he was in there. And like somehow he's belting on this album. He's going into this almost operatic vocal range. You're kind of like, where has this Jeff Tate been for the past 15 years? Like, how come you can't sound this good on your own albums?
It's the songwriting.
It's because the songwriting that Sammet can provide. That's why Tobias Sammet is like one of the best songwriters in metal, if not maybe the best songwriter in metal, because he can understand how to make. This is why this album is so great. I don't think you like him enough. Well, this is why this album's so great. And I was down on Sammet for a while. I was down on Mystery of Time. He rebounded with Space Police on Ed Guy. And I thought, like, finally, okay, you understand that Ed Guy is supposed to be a silly rock band.
Right.
You're running with it now. And now the songs are better because you're more confident in what you're doing. He's isolated the silliness with Ed Guy. He's kept the seriousness with Alvantasia. That's all you're going to get going forward. He's a compartmentalized his songwriting. And I think in doing that mentally, it's triggered something where it's just like kicked him into like another mode because.
So what song are we going to play? Let's play a song from the album now.
We are playing Draconian Love, which again has the singer from Sinbreed, right? The guy from Sinbreed.
Okay.
Who is like a power metal band with guys from fucking Blind Guardian, their side project. They were good. The Sinbreed was released a couple good albums, two good albums. With kind of this guy's voice being like, you know, rustic, rough, kind of sandpapery German heavy metal voice. And then he has him on this album and the guy sounds like he's Ville Lahala from Sentenced.
Yeah.
He sounds like,
The first time I heard it, it reminds me of Typo Negative.
He sounds like Peter Steele.
He does.
Like, and it's just like, okay, how did Tobias know that this guy could sound like that? Maybe they've known each other for a while. I'm sure they have. But then how do you know that he can deliver a performance like this? And why would you choose him for a performance like this? It's baffling to me. Like, why wouldn't you go get, like Vili, you know, Valo from him or something? I love this song.
Outside the box, man.
Outside the box.
Let's get into the song because we've been talking for like 17 minutes already.
This is a song that people are going to either hate when they hear it or they're going to love. But it works because of that reason.
There you go. Here is Avantasia. This song is called
Draconian Love.
You said Draconian Love. You said Draconian. You said Draconian Love. You said Draconian. Until you unlearn what you keep inside. Don't see the sand eyes, but frightened the light for an innocent soul. Till the cold arounds, we're gonna wait its turn. Wait its turn no more. Tell me, how should I embrace, like roses we'll wither on the vine? Should I buy my time if it dies away sometime? Where are you now? Where are you now? Leaving me down here lost in the waves. Hey, 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 when will God explain this? Draconian love. You said draconian love. You said draconian love. Where do I go? When will you explain this draconian love? It's not draconian love, it's not draconian. Infiltrate us with mercy, bait us with sympathy, blind us with love. We're lost in the clouds rolling by, what some of us read into what they feel. Like a grain of nothing, I feel cast in the wind of fancy and caprice. explain this draconian love. It's just draconian love. Explain this draconian love. Aspiration and tears, heartache and fears. Draconian love, you said draconian love. Unrequited love, down on my knees. Draconian love, it's all draconian.
All right, so you were just listening to Abath.
Abath.
Yeah. Abath
taking a
from
bath.
Immortal.
Okay, how to do it.
On his solo album, just called Abath.
Yeah.
Song called Ocean of Wounds?
Ocean of Wounds. Taking from self-titled album, Abath.
So,
yep.
Abath strikes first in the Abath vs. Immortal war now.
Yeah, sort of.
And kind of gets the victory because he releases that album first, you know? And, okay, I'll just say, first of all, I love the album. It's not... I love it because I'm getting to hear Abath again, because it's been since 2009 since I've gotten to hear new music from this guy. Because apparently, they couldn't get their crap together and Immortal just come out and make another album.
Right.
And I got to see them on when they played in San Antonio shortly after the album was released, a couple years after. And I'm so glad I got to see them then, because clearly they did 3 shows in America and that was it. We were lucky to get one of them in San Antonio.
They probably did it to fulfill some contract or something.
Hopefully. Well, I mean, whatever it was, I mean, it was super packed. I remember just like that venue, it was just crowded in that venue.
Where was it at?
Backstage Live in San Antonio. There had to be 1,000 people there. I mean, there were police outside and everything. Wow. And like, yeah, total security pat down going in. Anyway, so grateful to see them with their intact lineup. And I just kind of wonder, like, about this album, how much of it was geared towards a new Immortal album? Because it does sound a lot like some of it was.
So how many of these riffs were written way back for...
Right. And then there's some stuff that's different, some more kind of like rock and roll-y type stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like...
He did the Judas Priest cover.
Yeah. Well, but even during his original stuff, I can hear like parts where it's like, wow, that's a really weird rock and roll style solo going on.
So the song you picked, we were listening to it earlier, and it was definitely... I got a Venom influence by it.
Well, yeah, and you pointed out
I played In League with Satan,
yeah,
and it was like almost the same fucking, you know, yeah, song right there.
Which, knowing Abath, I'm sure he's all too aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. So cool little nod there, but...
everything on the album, the production's really super tight. It feels, everything feels raw, like in studio, you know what I mean? But with great sound.
But you get the great riffing, and it's like, without Abath, where is Immortal going to get that trademark riffing that we all associate with Immortal? I mean, I'm going to listen with interest to anything that Immortal puts out, but like who can you possibly grab to fill that void? You can't, you know?
The drums on this album are high in the mix and they're pretty fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, he had a good band, and sadly, I mean, I guess those guys are gone now, but...
That's right, they are gone now, aren't they? They already...
The rumor is that he's already filled the spot.
Apparently Abath has a bit of a egomaniac or something.
Yeah, but they didn't say why they left.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they got the album done. They were able to work together long enough to get the album done. Maybe it was just kind of like one of those things where it's like, okay, we helped you out in the album. We can't hang out for the tour.
So I got to say, if you're a fan of Immortal, you're going to like this
album. If you're a fan of Immortal, you should already know about this and should already be all over this. And me telling you to go get it is ridiculous. But if you were on the fence about like whether or not it would be any good and you were holding out, just go get it, because it's good. It's fun. If you have to compare it to other Immortal albums, I think it's more like... Sons of Northern Darkness than it is, you know, At the Heart of Winter. Some of the riffs actually reminded me of the last Immortal album, All Shall Fall, but it's just got that kind of loose kind of rock and rolly vibe.
Yeah.
And then sometimes that loose rock and rolly vibe of Sons of Northern Darkness goes into the wild rock and rolly vibe. And that's where the album gets different. That's where he sounds like he's branching out a little bit.
And yeah, you can see that because it's his band. He can do whatever he wants now. He doesn't have any naysayers, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, also because like the lyrics not coming from Demon Oz about, you know, grim and frostbitten kingdoms.
But to say being in the winter.
What's the fictional land called? It starts with a B.
You know more than me.
Well,
I don't know that much.
All these Immortal lyrics are about Blashgrith. Someone at home screaming at their stereo. Anyway, I'm sorry, I can't remember what the land is called. Anyway,
what kind of fan are you, man?
They're writing about this. You know, Demon Eyes writes the lyrics, and Demon Eyes has a lot to say about what he's writing about. So sometimes in Immortal, those lyrics would kind of dictate the pace of the riffing. Whereas I think here, Abbath is just sort of doing the lyrics, and it's such a riff-centric album. It's like the vocals kind of take a backseat to a lot of things.
All right, so we have a very important topic to talk about. I don't want to spend too much time on it because we have a lot of music to talk about, to play and to talk about. But
be disingenuous not to talk about it.
Everybody in the metal scene knows what's going on with the quote-unquote racist comments from Phil Anselmo. Okay, I've heard different stories. I've read different articles and this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I really don't know if I have an opinion.
You saw the Rob Flynn video, right?
I didn't watch it. I never actually watched it, but.
Because he was backstage before that show
started. Even Scott Ian is against him right now, like talking shit.
And was Scott Ian at that gig or he wasn't at that gig?
I don't know. So it was a,
It was Dime Fest.
A Dimebag show, right? Yeah. Dime Fest, whatever it was. Though he did basically a Heil Hitler salute.
White power, Nazi
salute. And white power.
Yeah.
Now, I heard people say that, oh, yeah, he was doing it as a joke, but you don't do that kind of shit as a joke in public unless you mean something.
The quote-unquote joke he was referencing was that they were drinking white wine backstage and that he was going on stage making a joke saying white power. Now, first of all.
Well, okay, that just sounds like somebody that's backtracking trying to, I did something really fucking wrong. Here's some bullshit excuse now.
Right, well, because the obvious thing is obvious. Like, even if that is true, how is the audience supposed to know that that's what you're referring to? They weren't backstage with you. Second of all,
weren't there for your inside joke.
Well, second of all, Rob Flynn was backstage, and in that video that he posted, he said that, well, it's not true. There was no white wine backstage. They were drinking beer. There was no such thing as an in-joke. No one was joking about it. In fact, Phil was making racist comments to him about, you know, a certain era of Machine Head's career where they're playing, quote-unquote, expletive music.
Oh, wow.
So that's what Rob Flynn was talking about in his response video, which is I urge everyone to go watch that.
I need to watch it.
Not because I particularly side with Rob Flynn and like everything he says is right. I just think it's interesting how much against, how vehemently he seems against Phil at this point. And it's like, okay, that's the framing of this whole thing. And everyone already knows all this stuff by now. So what I'm interested in is...
Here's my big question is, no matter if he did it or not, he's fucked himself up in the public. I mean, it's been everywhere. Do you think he can come back from this shit? Because some festivals don't want his bands to play.
Well,
he told his band down to go on with... He's like, this is fucked up. You know what? Just go on without me. It's going to hold you back.
Well, I want to talk about that. Before I want to talk about that, I want to talk about something more like... about us. Like I am a Pantera fan.
I am too.
You're a Pantera fan. We record the show in Houston, Texas.
We do.
We're Texas metalheads. We go to we've been to Texas local metal shows where
I started seeing Pantera before.
Yeah, you've seen
before
Pantera
Cowboys from Hell.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, like, Pantera, it's one of those things that and if you're listening to this outside of Texas, it's hard for you to understand that in Texas, Pantera is kind of like, they're sacred. Like everyone kind of unifies around their love for this band that was such a big part of our lives growing up.
Yeah. You can't deny that.
I mean, when I was a teenager in middle school, Pantera was like that band that like, no matter what kind of metal, if you're into punk, you still like Pantera. If you're into like grunge, you still respect
Pantera.
Cowboys
from Hell was a transformative album for me.
And they were a unifying band. Everyone just sort of enjoyed Pantera. You know, it's like, you didn't have to be the biggest hardcore fan of them, but when you heard Walk, you knew what the band that was playing, you know. So like when this whole thing happened, my first reaction was not outrage. It was just kind of like disappointment, you know? It was honest disappointment of like, oh, come on, Phil. Like, you know, it's not about what you're saying. I mean, it's clearly about what he's
saying. Definitely about what he was saying.
But in there's also a subtext to this story that's about like, I just feel like it's such a disappointment as someone who grew up listening to your music to have you hear you say those things, especially as a Texas metalhead.
Right.
Like this band we so identify as our own champion from Texas, you know? And I get it. He's a Louisiana guy.
Yes,
but
the
band is a Texas band, right. You know? And so I think like, for me, it was just, I was disappointed and I didn't want to write about it or anything. I was just kind of like, yeah, I don't even know what to say about this, because people, because I did have someone message me, like, say, are you going to talk about the Phil thing? I was like, no, because it's kind of embarrassing for it to come from.
It is embarrassing, but I don't know. I don't know where he can go from here, you know? I mean, so like some fest decided, okay, we're not going to have your band play. And then like what Hellfest?
Well, because the first one, what happened was it was, Florida Rock?
Yeah, Florida Rock.
In the Netherlands is a big festival, rock festival. And they were the first one to drop down.
Right.
And then that's when he issued his thing, a second apology, basically saying like,
Move on without me
down. And in fact, today, Pepper Keenan released a statement saying like, I've accepted his apology. I'm extremely disappointed in what he said. And you know, he needs to work out his own issues, that kind of thing,
yeah.
Which is sort of like, so what are you guys going to move on without him? He hasn't really addressed that. So I understand why Florida Rock dropped him, and I'm totally in favor of them doing it, because why would they need that grief? They're in the Netherlands. They're close to places where there have been histories of neo-Nazi activity,
right?
Where if they do have Down come out and play, what if a neo-Nazi group shows up, or what if, you know, members of that group show up and just, you know, go out there and start trouble because Down's there,
right? Because Phil's playing,
and this becomes this big security thing. It's like better to just drop these guys and not have take the risk. Mm-hmm. You know, we have too much at stake, money wise, insurance wise, etc. So I understand why they did, and people who are criticizing that festival are missing the larger picture. So what about Hellfest?
Hellfest, they said they were not going to drop them.
Right.
So what happened there is...
And they're in France.
They're in France, right. So a lot of their money, well, not a lot of their money, a little bit of their money, it actually comes from the French government.
I think it's like $22,000.
Yeah, which is, compared to what, you know, it costs to put on a festival like that, is nothing.
Yeah, $22,000 is like the cost you'd pay for like a mid-level, somewhat close to being headline status.
Yeah. So... They decided not to drop Down, and the government pulled their funding, and they're going to be there, as far as I know, until they change their tune, maybe. I don't know.
Or it's Down decides to pull out themselves. I mean, with what's going on in this band.
If they do, okay, this is going to lead to other problems, though. It's going to lead to protesters. It's going to lead to, like you said, it's going to lead to people that are going to support Phil because they think he's... a neo-Nazi. This is a very touchy subject.
Yeah, well, it's in freaking France, where they have a national law against hate speech, where they just in the past few months have suffered an extreme national tragedy, which is about intolerance and hate and all that kind of stuff. It's just coming from a different angle. It's just the same thing. So this is a festival that's, in some ways, you understand why these government officials would be like, look, your festival is named Hellfest. We already sort of have a problem with you guys, even though you guys are, you know, but this is a free country. You can do whatever you want to. So, yeah, you do that. It's a somewhat free country. But if you read the Hellfest promoter's response to them, to the French officials, that makes it a lot more murky of a story, because he claims that they're basically... that they've been trying to oust them and cut off funding for like a decade now or something or whatever. And so he makes it more of like, it's not about them. Like they're just jumping on this issue, on this Phil Anselmo issue. They didn't even know who this guy was 72 hours before they announced this. They're just jumping on this and appropriating it to use against Hellfest, which they've been doing for a long time, and it's not being reported in the media. So he's basically saying that it's disingenuous of the government to use this as a scapegoating issue, you know, even though the guy in question, Phil Anselmo, has already apologized for it. Okay, I understand what he's saying, but I'm going to have to side with, like, the government on this one. I know a lot of people are not going to agree with me, and that's fine, but the country has laws against hate speech.
Yep.
Now, the hate speech wasn't committed in France, but
it could still affect the country.
But it could still affect the security situation there. Why would France want a festival, a gathering of people in public, keep in a country where they just had a massive national tragedy, a massacre at a concert not 4 months ago? Why would they want this risk of like hate groups coming over from other countries? You know, free European borders, the EU and all that. people can travel from anywhere in Europe, you know, no matter what country it is, and bring their baggage with them. And all of a sudden you have maybe neo-Nazis showing up at Hellfest or something. I'm not saying it's likely that will happen. I'm saying that it could happen, and there's a reason for it happening, that it could happen. So I'm like, they're basically saying, drop this band, and we're going to cut off your funding. So I guess the organizers are confident enough in their financial security. They're like, yeah, we're going to call your bluff.
They said, keep your money.
Keep your money. Okay, so that sort of ends it. But if this is like a national security risk, I'm sure they can do more than just cut off the funding. They could shut down your event too. You know, it's not like that's somehow against their power.
I wish we had festivals like Hellfest here, because do you know what the lineup is in 2016?
It's a fantastic lineup.
Okay, so check this out. I'm just going to go down some of the bands that are playing. Rammstein, Volbeat, Bullet for My Valentine. Okay, I did not mean to say that band. Anthrax, Tremonti, Hailstorm, The Offspring, Dropkick Murphys, Hatebreed, Testament, Overkill, Sacred Reich, Vader, Havoc, Skeletal Remains, Abyss, Corp Laclani, Inquisition. And then there's like Sun O, Killswitch Engage. That's just one day. Down is on Saturday. It looks like Bad Religion's playing. You know, Dark Funeral's playing the same. Napalm Death, Terrorizer, Korn, Sick of It All, Foreigner.
Yeah, just
Twisted Sister, Within Temptation. I mean, come on.
It's a very diverse typical European diverse festival. It's just this one's like rock and hard rock and metal.
It's funny, right? Ghost is headlining over King Diamond now.
Yeah, you know.
But look at this lineup for this day. Ghost, King Diamond, Amon Amarth, Blind Guardian, Tarja, Dragon Force, Orphanland on one stage.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, clearly if they can afford all these guys, they're doing okay financially. Well, okay enough to keep the festival going.
This is a stage I wouldn't leave. Paradise Lost, Catatonia, Grand Magus, Insomnium, The Skull.
Yeah, that's a terrific lineup.
Hey, look, Jane's Addiction's playing too.
There you go. Yeah. It's a fantastic lineup. I just think, like,
I wish I like the blending of every kind of genre there.
All the flavors are there. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to go see Abyss, you can go see Abyss. You want to go see Korn, whatever you want to do. Right. Jane's Addiction.
Yeah.
I'd like that.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I mean it's a valuable festival, and it needs to keep going. But like,
you going there? Did you know about that festival in San Antonio, the River City Fest or whatever?
No, who's that?
Scorpions are playing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I drove to see the Scorpions in San Antonio a couple years ago.
Did you?
Yeah, they played at the, I think it was like the actual basketball arena the Spurs play at. It was okay. Sound wasn't the greatest in that big of a venue, kind of bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, it's very echoey in those type of places.
I'd rather see them in like an amphitheater like the Woodlands or something out here.
The River City Rock Fest, that's what it's called. At the AT&T Center, is that what it is?
Maybe that's different. No, I don't know.
You got Disturbed, Scorpions, Megadeth, Bullet for My Valentine, Hell Yeah. Oh, God. Okay, I'm going to stop there. The Sword.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done. A lot of bands I don't want to see.
Well, yeah.
Like two I want to see.
Yeah.
But you know a band I do like?
What's that?
Spiritual Beggars.
Oh, yeah. Back from the Dead.
Well, not really Back from the Dead. They put an album out a couple of years ago, I think.
Really? I have no idea. I thought the last thing they did was like, what, late 90s, early aughts?
No. The last album was 2013.
Oh, okay.
So the lineup now, of course, founding member Michael Amott from Arch Enemy, right. Carcass. Apollo is still their vocalist. Mm-hmm. He used to be in Firewind.
Yeah.
I love his vocals. It is totally different in the style of music. Charlie D'Angelo, Per Weiberg on keyboards. And I don't know who the drummer is, but he's been in the band since 1993. So
founding member, yeah.
Yeah, founding, pretty much. So definitely, if you like stoner metal, you like Deep Purple influenced heavy organ stuff, you're going to like this band.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I'm really a big fan of Apollo's vocals.
I have their first album on CD somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do too. Unfortunately, he's no longer in Firewind, but...
So who's in Firewind, their vocalist now?
They actually got a guy...
We did talk about this a long time ago, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up, because I know...
I always liked the name Spiritual Beggars, too. I just thought that was a cool band name.
I'm going to look up Firewind right now. Maybe. Here we go. Current band members. Lead singer, his name is... Oh, they got Henning Bossi. Okay, I listened to Gus G talk about on the Jamie Josta podcast recently.
Yeah.
And they talked about Firewind maybe playing some shows soon.
Yeah.
But who... Do you know what bands this guy's been in?
The name is very familiar.
Me too. Let's look him up on the other website.
Speaking of like the Talum. Speaking of the Josta podcast.
No, let's not go there right now.
Did you listen to the Mina Caputo?
I did.
Episode. What did you think about that? Because I thought it was like
it was very
unfocused rambling.
Yeah, it was. They talked about a lot of weird spacey shit. But let's talk about that real quick.
Okay.
Announcement that Life of Agony is going to have a new album out soon. I thought that's really cool.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad.
Okay, he was on Mayan, the last Mayan album.
Yeah.
Hypnocide.
There you
go. Oh, active bands. Brainstorm.
Metallium.
Metallium, yeah, there you go. That's okay. The big one.
Yeah.
I know I've recognized his name. But let's get back to
You know what I've also been listening to is Crystal Beggars. I was gonna start talking about Primal Fear.
Yeah.
I was like,
We're gonna play some of that next episode, because there's so much right now. Let's get into this.
Yeah.
The track that we picked out, it's the title track. It's the first single that's out. You can actually go listen to it on Spotify and all that good stuff.
So what's up with this band? How come I haven't, like, I mean, I consider myself to be pretty clued in, but somehow they've been eluding me. Like, I haven't seen, like, things about the album in 2013. I haven't seen, like, reviews about it. I haven't seen, like, any PR announcements about it. Like,
you're just standing
under the radar, you know? It's like, have Michael Amott in your band. Why am I not hearing about this?
True.
Sometimes I think, like some things will happen in metal, and I'll hear about them, like, 6 months later, and I'll be like,
but I don't know. I don't
is
think
it my fault, or is it
no,
their fault?
I don't think they're relying on the laurels of...
They're not touring. That's got to be the big thing.
They're not relying on the laurels of, Michael Amott from Arch Enemy, your favorite band. He's has this other band. They let the music... do its own
thing.
They're just
releasing albums, not making it like a priority band.
They never toured here, but they might tour some places in Europe.
Yeah.
I don't know. So let's get into the song, Sunrise to Sundown.
Yep.
Very catchy. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
Okay, so you were just listening to a song by a Austrian metal band called Serenity.
Right?
Austrian. Ah. This is from the new album Codex Atlanticus. It's a song called Reason.
I know you're a big fan of this band, right?
I love this band. Their album War of Ages was my number one album of 2013.
I remember that now.
And then the band, as soon as I got, because that album, you know, got me into them, and I loved their back catalog and everything.
As soon as I was into them, they imploded.
Thomas Buschberger, the guitarist,
I think it's your fault.
He left. Well, he left the band as far as being an active member because he has a day job and he sort of helps them out with the managing and stuff. But he's not in the band anymore, not writing with them. The door is open for him to return. But anyway, he was a big. When I got into this band, him and the vocalist Jörg Neuhauser were sort of like they were like Roy Kahn and Thomas Youngblood of Camelot, kind of like this great songwriting team. And when I read the news that Thomas had left, I was sort of like, oh no!
Like that's sort of like Angela Gossow leaving Arch Enemy, but now she's just their manager.
Yeah, but he's less so. He's just sort of like I'll help them out with the website and that kind of thing. Anyway, so he left, and I kind of felt like. Well, there goes the songwriting core because he's the guitarist and the vocalist is the vocalist, doesn't write the riffs. So they got a new guitarist in there. Then their female vocalist, Clementine Delune from France, she leaves and joins Visions of Atlantis. Mm. And I think she's guesting on the Marith album upcoming.
Which album?
Marith.
M-Y-R-A-T-H?
Yeah.
I like them.
Their album's about to drop soon too. So I think she's going to be on that route. Anyway, she leaves and she was a big reason why I liked that band because I thought that her approach to female vocals worked well with him and it wasn't just like a Beauty and the Beast thing. Like they were both kind of bringing the beauty and then they were both capable of bringing like kind of the darker, more kind of, I don't know. It was like a really fresh approach to female vocals in power metal. Anyway, they can't, you know, this album was basically just like this band shredded down to a four piece, you know, and it's Jörg and then the bassist Fabio De Mora. He's the longtime member. And I kind of didn't know what to expect, kind of with the Avantasia thing. I was like, well, but in this case, it was more like they lost their songwriting core, or have they? And the great news about this album is that it's like surprisingly great. Like it's fun.
I know why you like this album. I know why you like this band.
Well, Jörg's a vocalist who a lot of people compare to Tony Kaka.
I was about to say
he has very
Sonata Arctica. It's all over this album.
He has a real innate sense of how to create addictive vocal melodies, you know? Like, and more so than in any other Serenity album, this album is built around his vocal melodies. The riffs take a back seat, which they never used to in old Serenity albums. But it's not a bad thing. It's somehow like you realize that maybe in the past where you were attributing a lot of the songwriting success to Thomas Buschberger, it's actually more Jörg as well. Like
you know what I love about your knowledge of metal is that you remember everybody's name.
Well, when you write it down, it sort of sticks in your mind, you know. Jörg, though, I kind of feel like I owe him an apology, and I sort of do apologize in my review because I feel like I lost faith because the guitarist left.
Right.
You always in metal we get used to the guitarist being kind of the central songwriting force of the band, and the vocalist is just sort of this guy who sings really well. Well, in this case, he proved me wrong, and it was kind of like, no, actually, vocal melodies are a very important part of this band, and I write the vocal melodies.
You know, you're right.
There are some great ones.
Most bands that you think of, the guitar player, they're the ones that write all the music.
Right. But this is a very heavy metal perspective because metal fans are more plugged in than pop music fans.
Right.
We understand that most of the time, the star, the front man is not the person writing the music.
Pop music, it's people that are hired, usually.
In just pop acts or in rock bands, you think, well, the singer, the guy who's the center of attention, he's the guy writing everything. Most of the time, it's the bassist or the guitarist or whatever. Right. In metal, we understand that innately going in. There's a reason why everyone knows Steve Harris's name, because he's Iron Maiden. He's the bassist. He's not the front
man. You know, one band that this is going to be a really cool segue. Go with me here.
Okay.
One band whose drummer writes most of their music.
Anthrax?
Anthrax, you are correct. Yeah. So I wanted to get into the segment here. Last week, myself and George, my co-host from the Metal Geeks podcast, went to the Anthrax Lamb of God show. And we're going to bring George on right now to discuss that very concert.
Hello, George.
What's going on, metal fans?
Hey, this is George's his
first time on the
premiere appearance on the show.
Yeah. We reference you a lot, too, than you think.
That's awesome. I get talked about a lot. I love that.
You're a center of attention.
I am.
In many ways.
I was a lead singer in a couple of bands in high school, so that makes sense.
I'm curious, why did you go to this show?
I'm a fairly decent photographer, and I wouldn't say the best, but I'm a fairly decent photographer, and Carrie needed a photo guy.
I'm writing a review on the show for KNAC.
KNAC, yeah.
So I brought him along with me. He was mentioning he wanted to see Lamb of God.
Yeah, because I am an actual Lamb of God fan. And I've always wanted to see Anthrax because he talks about it so damn much.
Right.
So I figured I'd check it out since they're both going the same place at the same time.
So let's talk about the show.
Sure.
We both worked that day, so we tried to get there as early as possible because the opening band is a band from Dallas called Power Trip. Very cool crowd.
We caught the last song.
Last
song.
By the time we actually got in, got our tickets, got everything settled, parked, and all that, we got to see their last song, and I liked them.
They sounded cool.
They're you know, crossover thrash.
Yeah.
I listened to them on Spotify, and I really
like
that
They're
band.
Local, too, right? They're like a
Dallas.
Houston. Oh, Dallas.
Dallas, yeah.
Yeah.
This is like their first big
tour.
Tour, yeah. This is a pretty good tour to be on.
Yeah, no shit.
And then the moment I sort of was dreading.
Why were you dreading this moment? We've made
no bones about how I'm not a fan of Def Haven.
It's Def Heaven.
I think it's Def Haven. It doesn't matter.
Spelled Heaven.
Doesn't matter. We don't want to give him any credit.
Yeah, we had a spirited debate about this band on the last
episode.
Yeah.
With
Dave, yeah.
Did Dave like him?
No.
Oh.
I think he sort of did. He was defending them in a kind of devil's advocate sort of way.
Yeah, because Dave's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Right. He was playing the devil's advocate a little bit on that. Yeah. You know, and I was at the show, watching them at the show, and in my review, I made the comment where Dave said, oh, it makes you sound like an old man. But
he's not wrong.
It is the vocals. For me, it's the lead singer. He does, I mean,
he's not good.
He's not.
Clark's not good.
So there's some people that can do that style really, really, really well. And it fits for certain types of music. But to me, Def Haven blend like psychedelic influences, like 60s, 70s stuff with like raw black metal.
I think saying psychedelic is more like they kind of bring like dream rock, pop influences in their thing.
Okay, very, very shoegazer style.
Yeah, he said that during the show.
They're considered shoegaze black metal, is what their new term is.
Yeah. You also call them emo metal.
I did.
It's called them pejorative.
I also called them hipster black metal.
There you go. Hipster black metal is another thing you said when we were in line.
And I think I was telling you at the show because you asked me what is shoegaze.
Yeah, I didn't know until afterwards.
You looked it up, right?
No, you told me.
Okay.
About it.
I like to think this show is maybe one of the more fair outlets about why we don't like Def Haven, because it's like we're not using like expletives to describe them. We're actually at least we're trying to explain why we don't like him. And let me tell you something. He is the worst vocalist for a metal band out there
and I think if they had a different vocalist, I would probably enjoy the band.
They'd be a better band.
I cannot get over his vocals. And I listen to bands that have, you know, gargly, you know, black metal style, but he's not good.
Yeah. The music is, like, I think what the guitarist is doing, the music is good.
That's what I was saying during the show. I was like, some of the music sounded okay.
Unfortunately, at the concert, I don't know if they got a good sound check or what, but they sounded very, it was just a wall sound with them.
I could see that happening. Yeah.
But let's move on to the band that I was there to see. Of course, Anthrax. So I think I did the math that night. The first time I ever saw Anthrax was 1990 when they opened up for Iron Maiden. I think Iron Maiden was on No Prayer for the Dying, and it was Persistence of Time for Anthrax. One of my very first fucking shows. Me and my best friend Scott we woke up the next morning, our necks hurt because we were headbanging so much, because it's what you do when you're a teenager at a heavy metal show, right?
Yeah.
And in the 26 years since that show, I've only missed Anthrax one time.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, right?
Dedication, yeah.
Even in around 2000, I went and saw them here. I saw them in San Antonio, and I saw them in Victoria, like all within a week.
So you did a Texas tour.
I did.
Yeah.
That's right. So, I mean, I have a Not Man tattoo.
Right.
I'll admit I haven't listened to him as much lately, but I'm sort of getting reinvigorated. The live show, they bring the energy. They know how to command a stage and know how to command an audience. Joey yeah. Belladonna is a phenomenal frontman. No matter what you say, he knows how to get that audience eating out of his hand. When Scott Ian starts doing like the stomp, the Milano mosh, or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Man, when they're firing on all cylinders, yeah. it's a great show.
Iconic band, iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this show, apparently Charlie Benante, you know, he had carpal tunnel syndrome surgery a couple years ago. So he's unable to tour all the time with them. He has to take a couple weeks off at a time. So like after the recording of the new album, he went out for a little while and he goes back home for a little while and then they get a replacement. But the replacement for this tour is John Dede.
Yeah.
So you can't get much better than that. No. He's been there, you know, he's been a replacement for him before.
Yeah.
Like when family stuff happened, but right. George is like, who's that?
I'm bad with names.
So John Dede used to be, he's been a replacement in Slayer. He's been in Testament. He's been in...
I know those bands.
What other band was he in? That's pretty famous.
You're talking about his original?
Yeah, maybe.
Wow, you're the one with the computer. I remember.
I guess I could look it up if I wanted to.
He's just kind of like a jack of all trades guy.
It was a fun show, though. Yeah. Anthrax really made it fun to watch.
How was Lamb of God?
Oh, I'm a Lamb of God fan, so I enjoyed it. Yeah. So.
In Slay, Ister is the band I was thinking of that he was in for a while.
Huh.
Yeah. But, yeah, so let's talk about the Anthrax show. This is your very first time seeing Anthrax live. What did you think?
It was fun. I had a great time. They gave me some great pictures. You saw them, so.
We will share those on our Facebook page, too, for MSRcast and Metal Geeks.
Yeah, sure, totally.
They're good pictures.
Like, comment them. Tell me what you think. Mm-hmm. Tell me if you think it sucks. They're available for prints if you want to buy one.
Look at that. Chilling out already.
Yeah.
I'm a photographer. What do you want me to say?
Yeah.
So I know you don't know a lot of their music, right? From hanging around me a lot, you probably listen to it a lot.
Hanging around you is what I know. I know they're like popular hits, like all the stuff that's been on MTV and stuff like that.
So they played 8 songs this evening, right?
I thought it was more than that.
No, it was only 8 songs.
Wait, they weren't headlining?
No, they did not headline. No, they opened up for Lamb of God.
Yeah, they opened for Lamb of God.
Yeah.
I thought they'd do like
a co-headlining. It was a weird lineup, though, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It felt a little weird when
I thought it was an Anthrax gig.
No, it was a Lamb of God show that Anthrax was opening up for.
Mm.
you totally saw you saw the divide.
Not
of,
that
like,
into
crowd.
Randy. Not that into Lamb of God myself.
So that was my main problem with the show. I know Lamb of God is huge right now. I know they're big.
Right.
Well, they just came out with an album not too long ago. So
if you're going to bring an iconic, legendary thrash band like Anthrax, at least do a co-headliner where even Anthrax plays first, but they get to play just as long. If I'm going to be the devil's advocate here and be a douche about it, but if they took the set time of Def Haven and gave it to Anthrax, much better show.
Was Def Haven that long?
Def Haven
played probably like 20, 30 minutes.
Def Haven's spreading that demographic, though. They're getting then people who wouldn't normally go to a show like that.
They don't belong in a thrash show like that.
They don't, but now...
Lamb of God and Anthrax, that works together.
Yeah. It does?
It does, yeah.
I think more and you're going to find increasingly more and more bills like that where it's like whatever makes the cross-section of fans the broadest because we're teetering on an overloaded concert industry and people have too much... There's too many bands coming through town, you know? Like, I was even looking at the Houston metal calendar going like... Am I going to go to Megadeth or not? Like, what do I want to? What do I want to afford, or what do I want to save up my money for?
Exactly. Like, set list for Anthrax.
I want to see Foreigner in the summer.
Do you?
Yes.
They played a song from Worship Music. They played a couple songs from Worship Music. Fight Until You Can't. And then they played In the End, which is an amazing song live. It's the one about Dio and Dimebag.
Mm-hmm.
And like during that part of the song or the set, they brought these.
Canvases.
Like, they had canvases down on front of the stage, and they had Dio and Dimebag on it, which was cool.
Yeah. I have pictures of that, too.
Yeah, you do. They did Cotton Amash and Indian. They ended the set with Indians. They did Got the Time, and this is probably where... This is my least favorite Anthrax song they played.
Yeah, I'm not, but you enjoyed it though.
Well, yeah, I'm just I just wish
bobbing your head. To
I just
the
wish they would
time.
Stop playing it live and play. They played Antisocial, which
but
isn't even
it's a fun anthem song.
But it's though. Not even their song, so it's a cover.
But people like
I'm
it.
Just going there, and they played two songs off the new album. They played Evil Twin, which I love that song, and they played Breathing Lightning, which it's a different song for them.
Yeah,
very more rock radio style. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but.
I'm not as wild about Evil Twin as you are. I think.
I mean,
it's an okay song. I think the best song of the album is the first track on the album. Which not to say that the album, I thought the album was bad, but that was the one that stuck with me the most.
That one come out.
The album comes out February 26th.
Yeah,
we just have a promo for it that we've listened to many times.
The song "You Gotta Believe" is the first song on the album, right? Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
Fantastic song. Great, great riff, great chorus, punchy writing. I don't know, just like, it sounded like old school Anthrax to me. Like, and
it does.
Yeah.
And there's some different stuff on this album. I really loved Worship Music. I don't think this album is as good as Worship Music.
Yeah, so you were kind of down on this album for a while. Has that changed?
You know, when you listen to an album too much right away,
you burn yourself out.
You get
out.
Burned out on a little bit. I think I was hitting that for a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
So
I was listening to when I was editing these photos, I was like going through like their hits.
Yeah.
Kind of made it easy to edit the photos.
Yeah. There you go. That works.
Yeah.
So
what's your favorite Anthrax album?
Or song? I don't know. I wouldn't tell
you.
I couldn't tell you the name of the songs. I like, oh yeah, this is a good song. Or, oh,
so before we're actually going to play a song from the new album, the song you were just talking about.
Right. Yeah.
But let's talk about a little bit like about the Lamb of God performance.
It was awesome.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's my second time seeing him. So. Okay.
I've seen him a few times on different, like, opening
I've
set
seen
list.
Them at another festival. I can't remember the festival right now, but it was, like, another, like, chock full of, like...
And I'm not gonna say I'm a huge Lamb of God fan. I know maybe, like, five or six songs a little bit.
Yeah.
But, okay, this was my opinion of the show. Randy Blythe... jumping all around the stage. He's a fucking maniac on stage.
I got shots of him like running, and it's like a sequence of shots where he like runs from one side of the stage and he has a platform in the middle where he like leaps into the air and like goes like spider monkey for a second. Yep. And then he ends up on like...
They had these really cool, you know, projections screens. And screens and stuff on the stage. But I know how great Chris Adler is a drummer, and I felt the performance was very mechanical. It felt very
like going through the
program,
motions.
Going through the motion, sort of like here's where I play this part, and it didn't feel raw or natural. It just felt very pre-programmed, and I couldn't
felt like a set they played before. Maybe
well, yeah, I know they play it every night, but
it's like
when Anthrax plays, they play the same set every night, but it still feels raw and new every time you see them. You know,
I it's like an intangible thing you can't quite describe, but you can tell.
I'm not saying anything negative about Lamb of God, because I do like them.
Right.
It's just I just didn't feel them at the show that night.
No, there have been bands I love where I go see them live. I can tell that it's like, you guys are...
You're just going through the motions.
Like tonight, like maybe like yesterday you were really into it and you're recovering from that, and tonight you're just kind of trying to get through it, you know?
Can you name one?
Yeah, I will say that... when I saw Camelot with Nightwish in Austin, I felt like Camelot. It was nice to see the Tommy Karavik live but comparing that performance in Austin to what they just did in Houston a couple months ago, I mean they were like on fire in Houston.
Yeah.
And I felt like the first time I saw them with Karavik in Austin, I kind of felt like they're like a little going through the motions.
Yeah. So, do you disagree with me on the Lamb of God assessment?
Well, taking consideration for the first four songs, I was taking pictures.
Yeah.
So I was trying to make whatever I was taking pictures of look amazing. There wasn't really a moment where I was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of dull or boring. He was playing to the crowd a lot. He was getting the crowd part of the show.
Have you seen them before?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I saw them when they came out with, was it Laid to Rest?
Yeah.
That album? I think. I can't remember the name of the album right now. It's like Wrath or something like that. It's a long title album. I can't remember. But
I thought Laid to Rest was one of their albums.
What?
I thought Laid to Rest was one of their albums. I don't know.
I think it's this is one of the songs.
Okay. Yeah. I know that. I knew that, but...
Anyway. Yeah, but... I don't know. They look the same to me. But I wasn't, like, critiquing it for that. I was just there to have a good time and take photos.
Right. I was there for Anthrax, and I'll admit that right now.
And you got an awesome hoodie from it.
The hoodie was very, very awesome. So it's like this, you know, what they call heather gray, so it's sort of like white specks in it.
Right.
But it has the big, when you zip it up, it has the Anthrax logo on the front. And everything's like really cool, like patch material. Doesn't feel cheap at all. Because it definitely wasn't cheap.
I was about to say, it better not
cheap. It was like $70 for the jacket, but I was like, okay, should I get this jacket? I don't know. I have a hoodie already, blah, blah, blah. But I've never owned something that was that cool looking for one of my favorite bands. Right. So I made a like Facebook poll and I was like, yes, get it. So a friend of mine, Rosalinda from Realms of Metal and Texas Metal Concerts, go check that out.
Yeah.
She's like, well, go to the website, see how much it is with shipping and all that. The website was $100.
Not including shipping.
I'm like, okay, so it's a better deal to buy it now.
Right.
So I bought it. Yeah. The coolest thing, the thing that got me, it's inside the hoodie, there's a caricature of Knotman.
Right.
Where the head part goes.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, you sold me there. You got me. It is a cool jacket. And I was thinking about adding other patches to it, like other band patches. What do you think?
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. No, I think, you're okay on that one right now.
I got a really cool Bortnagar patch from the new album.
Why don't you just go get like yourself like a battle vest?
I want a battle jacket. I've never owned one.
You want to get like a blank jacket for that kind of thing and then start working on that
yourself.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
I've always wanted one, but never owned one.
You should get one.
I feel like I grew up in an era that was past that. So for me to go back and do it would be kind of like, I'm trying to be a poser or something. I'm not going to do it.
Damn poser.
Remember that Iced Earth show we were at? When it was Symphony X, Iced Earth?
Right.
And there was a guy in the front row, this grizzled, long-haired, silver-haired metal guy. And he had a Sabotage, Hall of the Mountain King back patch. And then all these other thrash metal bands around him. I'm like, that guy earned that jacket? I'm not even going to, I mean, that he earned that for years of metal listening. So, you know. I don't want to start doing that myself.
You're like, I'm not worthy.
I'm not worthy of that. That guy is like a better metalhead than I am.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know what I would put on a battle jacket. Like, because you have to have that.
Isn't it
centerpiece?
It's like your favorite band goes on the big back.
Right. You have to have that
and then
big
everything
part.
Goes around it.
No, yeah. You have to have a center.
What would be my centerpiece band, though, you know?
Well, I think it had to be Anthrax.
Yeah.
Well, and now we're back to the goddamn hoodie again. But see, the problem with the hoodie is that the back design's too big, right? Don't alter the hoodie. Okay.
You pay too much money to ruin that one.
Yeah.
All right.
Go get yourself like a cheap jean jacket from like
JCPenney
or something.
JCPenney.
You know JCPenney hasn't changed their logo in like 40 years or something.
It's actually not true. They did an update. I was watching
Watch Back to the Future, they had the same logo.
They really should change their logo. That's a pretty
It's a box now.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like their little logo is a box with a
G. Oh, okay, yeah.
So they have changed it.
Let's talk about metal again.
JC.
I don't know how we got to our work.
I was just saying, you can go there, get yourself a jean jacket, and do whatever you want to that.
Let's actually play an Anthrax song now.
Yes,
You actually picked this song out.
Yeah.
What song did you pick?
You Gotta Believe, first track off the album. Honestly, I just kept on coming back to this song. I would let the album play. I would just let it go all the way through. And they'd be like, get to like, you know, track number 10. They'd be like, okay, all right, let's get through this and then get back to the other one. You know, it's just, I don't know. I'm not the biggest Anthrax fan in the world. I do enjoy the John Bush era more, I have to say.
That was a bald dude, right?
Well, he's bald
now. Yeah.
He was bald when he was singing with him, right?
No, not really.
He's the one I remember when I was editing the photos, there's this one video, it's a really shitty video, where they're on the top of an apartment building, and like the whole building's coming down due to how hard they were rocking, and they're like on the top floor, and the floor is falling, and it was really shitty, because you could tell it was all like window projection and stuff like that.
You know Keanu Reeves was in an Anthrax video.
I did. I saw that video too.
Yep. And what's her name? Jenna Elfman got her start in an Anthrax video.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Black Lodge, I think it was.
Huh. Dharma, huh?
Yep, Dharma.
Yeah, Dharma.
There you go.
What's also really cool about Anthrax is Scott Ian's so, like, iconic. And I guess easy to spot out. I guess he's very popular.
He's very identifiable. Yes,
very
he's,
identifiable.
He's,
and,
he's the vocal piece of that band. Yeah. He's out every time, you know, any of these like shows need to talk to somebody that's in a metal band, they get him.
Yeah, and so I showed people who don't even like come close.
Well, everybody knows
listening.
Who he is.
Yeah, like they don't even listen to metal or anything like right. that. And they said like, oh, who's that guy? I know that guy. And I was like, oh, it's Scotty.
Yeah, yeah, he's
Do
around.
You know who his stepfather or his father-in-law? I'm sorry.
No.
Somebody we mentioned earlier on the show. Do you know this?
No.
His father-in-law is Meatloaf.
Shut up.
He's married to Pearl Adey, yeah. Married for a while.
Right on.
They have a kid together, and his father-in-law is Meatloaf.
Whoa.
There's some interesting stories in his book. About,
I guess I never put that together, because, yeah, I always knew his wife's name was Pearl.
Yeah.
I can't believe I didn't figure that out.
His mind is blown right now. You need. I'll let you borrow the book if you want to read the book. There's some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
The story is about like the first time you ever met Meatloaf when she brought him home.
Did Meatloaf like scared him
he
and shit
was
like
a
that?
Dick to him.
He's like, I cut your balls.
He's
off.
Like, what are you doing to my daughter? I was like, fuck.
But yeah. To be honest, Meatloaf is not that scary.
He was pretty. He was a weirdo in Fight Club.
Yeah. Exactly. What is he gonna do? Lay on top.
That's
of
true.
You?
All right, so let's get into the Anthrax song now. You Gotta Believe, right?
Yeah.
What's the album title?
For All Kings.
Exactly.
Which is a great album title.
Comes out in a couple weeks, February 26th.
Yeah, also this one.
Pick it up.
Yeah.
Yep. On a Friday.
Yes.
So I still can't get over that.
Yep.
Welcome back to the show. We just finished listening to something from the brand new Anthrax, which comes out in a couple of weeks on February 26th. We gotta believe. You gotta believe.
Yep, I'm believing. I'm believing.
You a believer now?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Good Anthrax album.
That is a really good song. Yeah. I mean, there's like
that is a great song.
That part where it just sort of slows down at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. Still like John Bush era Anthrax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. It's something about it. Maybe it's just nostalgia that's overwhelming my opinion. But I mean, I like to worship music. It's not that I don't like their albums with Belladonna. It's just maybe it's just I prefer Bush as a vocalist over Belladonna.
You like the Bush, don't you?
And I think like, yeah, I've always enjoyed his vocals in Armored Saint and in Anthrax. Yeah, and maybe too. I just kind of yearn for that again, you know.
I've always thought he was a better vocalist than Anthrax.
Yeah, no, he is. He was, you know.
I'm a huge fan of John Bush sings.
I feel like when he was in the band, they were able to connect with him better on a songwriting level.
This is weird. The new Redemption album, I just got the promo for it. I don't know if you listened to it yet, but there's a Who cover of Rain Over Me, that song.
Yeah.
John Bush sings on it.
Oh, cool. I need
it's
to listen to
really
that.
Different.
Yeah, all right.
Pretty cool.
Excellent.
I'm gonna have to play that next time.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of the Bush,
yeah,
I remember way back when Papa Josh used to be a co-host. I did a full episode, if you go way back in the archives, of only John Bush era Anthrax.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You guys were very specific back then. Yeah,
we really were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I remember we did an episode called Look Ma, No Ozzy. We played Black Sabbath without any Ozzy.
I think he told me about that. Yeah. Okay.
That was cool.
Yeah. My brother actually works for a parking subcontractor out there. He does like accounting and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was actually on site at the Black Sabbath show a couple nights ago in the Bay Area. And he was like, he was texting me like, he's like, yeah, I've never seen this many metalheads in one place. I'm like, I have.
Yeah, from the video that I've seen of that tour.
Yeah.
Ozzy's gone, dude.
Well, they just canceled a show on the.
He's been sick.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Wow. All right. So what do you want to talk about now?
Well, we still have two more songs to play.
We do. And I think this is going to be our last segment right here. So. Yeah. Do you have any more topics you wanted to discuss?
Well, only that we haven't scratched the surface of the new releases that have come out in the past 2 months.
Fuck.
We had to push a lot of stuff up to the next episode.
Yes.
So if you're wondering why like we're not talking about, which we mentioned earlier, Primal Fear, next episode, we're going to get to it.
We're being rule breakers tonight.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Quick rant. I mean, my thing and... I know we're going to talk about this at length on the Metal Geeks episode, but I think it sucked that Metallica didn't get to do the halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Did it?
I think it really did. Because they picked Coldplay for Super Bowl 50, the golden anniversary Super Bowl.
Okay.
Why not pick a Bay Area artist since the Super Bowl is in San Francisco?
That is true.
So and Metallica.
They picked U2 Light.
Look, beer drinking idiot males in the United States like the NFL. They love the NFL. They also love Metallica. Okay. It just makes perfect sense. And the fact is it's a missed opportunity by the NFL. They even had an NFL sanctioned concert the night before, called the night before with Metallica at AT&T Park. So clearly they were aware of the band and they were willing to bring them into the festivities and acknowledge like this aspect of, you know, Bay Area music. Even Journey would have been a better choice than Coldplay. I mean, come on, you know.
Coldplay, who else was it?
Beyonce and Bruno Mars. I mean, I don't have an opinion on Beyonce. She's a pop star or whatever. But Bruno Mars is just the epitome of awful music. So, missed opportunity. And, of course, I guess even Metallica is too aggressive for, you know, mainstream halftime Super Bowl audience.
They're too mainstream for the metalheads, and they're not mainstream enough for the mainstream.
Is there a person in this country that doesn't know Enter Sandman? Like, maybe my mom doesn't know that song.
I think she does.
I played Metallica enough around her, so she knows,
the Pat Boone version.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And Durant.
End of rant. Are you done?
End of rant. Yeah.
All right. Here, let me help you off that that soapbox.
I guess we won't talk about it on the MSR and the Metal Geeks because we already talked about it here. So
yeah, we can still talk about it.
All right.
Because we're recording another episode of the Metal Geeks podcast, which is our sister show.
Mm-hmm.
Since Sean is here in the studio, he's going to come on and talk about Arrow, whatever the fuck else he wants to talk about.
Yeah.
For about an hour, and then we're done.
Yeah.
But I think we should start wrapping this episode up. Let's talk about where they can find us now. The main thing that I really want to talk about right now is Metal Onslaught Radio.
Yes.
So that's something that just started a couple weeks ago. Go to Metal Onslaught Magazine and then click on the link. You can actually get an app, a listening app. You can just, but what it is, it's Monday through, it's like every day of the week, there's shows every night. MSR Cast is on Sunday evenings, and Metal Geeks Podcast is on Tuesday evenings at 9 p.m. Central. So there's a lot of other really cool shows like the Epic Texans on there. Another friend of mine, Deep in the Horror of Texas, they do a horror podcast out of here from right here in Houston.
Yeah.
A lot of really cool little like metal shows that I've never even heard before.
It's an impressive variety of stuff. Like check it out.
A lot of hair metal on there.
Yeah. I mean, I was impressed with how fun. Yeah. I actually was listening for a while the other on Monday. And I was impressed with just how like diverse and fun it is. And it's kind of like a centralized place to get a lot of metal content, and it's diverse. Yeah, it is definitely diverse.
So I really want to give thanks and appreciation for letting both of these shows be on there.
Yeah, it's cool.
MSR Cast and Metal Geeks. You know, we've been doing MSR Cast over 10 years now, so
yeah,
it's not going anywhere, guys. Yeah. I'm sorry. You'll pry this thing out of my cold, dead hands.
Yeah, and if you actually get into our podcast through that radio, let us know.
So yeah, send us emails, msrcast@gmail.com. Yeah. You can find us on the Twitters. You can find us on the Facebook and Instagram.
Yes.
Look for both MSR Cast as well as Metal Geeks, as well as the Metal Pigeon.
Yeah, yep.
We're everywhere. We're everywhere.
Yeah, you can find us.
Not MySpace.
No.
Are you on MySpace?
No.
Okay.
Is that still going?
I don't know.
Should we be on MySpace?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
We're good.
All right.
Also, you can find us on the Blast Syndicate, which is a really cool podcast network. Go to the Blast Syndicate on the Googles, on your internet browser, and you can find all the cool heavy metal podcasts that make up that network. And I'm excited to be on there.
Yeah. Iron City rocks. They weren't kidding about that guy getting like all the good guests. I don't know how he's pulling that off.
I haven't done a good interview in a while, but I think in the next week or two, we're actually going to have Dauber from Oceans of Slumber, who are about to put out their debut album on Century Media Records.
Yeah, freaking Century Media.
And I think we're also going to get the director of their past two music videos to be here in the studio as well.
That'll be cool.
Talk about making a heavy metal music video.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool, man. I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Dauber's a good guy. He's a lot to say about music, so.
Yeah.
You know a lot about music? Pick this guy's brain.
Nice.
Trust me. And that new Oceans of Slumber album, it's so good. They're going to blow up on this album.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
And not that they're not already getting big, but
yeah, it's crazy to see them being talked about by like people outside of Houston now. Like
it is, right? Yeah. I've known Dauber for a long time. He's been in a lot of, you know, underground death metal bands for so long, and always been a workhorse and pushing forward. And he finally, they're there. You know what I mean?
He won't be able to say anything about this, but we can speculate. I think they're going to be bigger than Venomous Maximus as far as bands coming out of Houston recently.
I think they have a broader appeal.
Yeah, definitely broader appeal. Yeah.
But they don't make their own hot sauce.
I know it's not a competition, but it sort of is. So it's just
they don't make their own hot sauce. But Trevi has Big Daddy's Aspern, where they have like my favorite hot sauce in the world is I Hate God hot sauce. I mean, ghost peppers.
Oh, really?
Oh, if you haven't, we need to get him on and talk about that.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
I'm not wild on the taste of the ghost peppers.
Really?
Yeah, it's something about the taste of the actual pepper.
Have you tried the I Hate God one yet?
No, maybe I'll change.
It's called
my mind.
In the Name of Suffering.
Okay.
Best hot sauce ever.
Is it ridiculously hot?
No, it's not ridiculous. Okay, it's not over what you can handle.
Yeah, all right.
It's really it has a really good smoky flavor.
We should eat
to it.
Hot sauce live on the MSR right? cast. The sound of crunching chips. People turning off the podcast in droves.
That has the best sound quality ever of chips being eaten. Wow. Let's not do that.
So we're going to play two more songs to close us out.
Yep. I just bought this EP off of iTunes last week, or mm-hmm. not actually this week, a couple of days ago. One of my favorite bands, no bones about it, is Trouble, a legendary doom metal band from Chicago. And one of my favorite vocalists is Eric Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer in Trouble, of course, which now has Kyle Thomas. He used to be an Exhorter in a bunch of bands.
Oh, yeah,
but,
yeah.
The Skull is the new band from Eric Wagner. He also has another band called Blackfinger. And apparently he just put out, I need to order this. He put out sort of like an acoustic style CD of the songs that he was working on for these bands. And he released it on his website.
Oh, cool.
Just like raw versions of them, which is cool. I need to order that. But you know, they just put out a 2-song EP on iTunes, which is available now. Called The Longing.
Right.
The song we're going to play is that new song called The Longing, but they also remake the legendary name, the band, the song they're named of the new band is named after in one of the old albums, The Skull. It's a cool version of it, too.
Yeah. your dog's making weird noises of disapproval or approval. I can't tell.
I think she likes it. What are we going to get into after that?
Omnium Gatherum's new single. And this is an album I've been anticipating highly, probably one of the most anticipated 2016. The album doesn't come out until the end of February, but and we're going to talk about the album more on the next episode.
And this is the only song I've heard so far.
So this is not, we don't really have much to say. The single is freaking awesome, though. I mean, it's what called Frontiers?
Yes, Frontiers.
And it's just like, I don't know, maybe the catchiest Omnium Gatherum song I've heard, like, since The Unknowing. It's just like, I don't know, a shining example of why I love this band and why this album, I'm pretty sure, is going to rule, you know, so.
Death Doom is awesome.
This is sort of like this is like a preview for the next episode, Omnium Gatherum. We're going to be talking about that album a lot.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So
I think that wraps it up.
Yes.
I give thanks to George for being on the episode.
Thank you, George.
Yeah, give thanks to me.
So he just showed up.
Thank you guys for having me, actually.
Thank you. Thank you for talking about the Anthrax show. We'll talk about again on Metal Geeks, probably.
Yes.
Sure. Also, check out my photos. Like, share them if you want to buy some.
Can you hear my eyes rolling in the back of my head when you did that? But if you enjoyed...
You get to pimp yourself out, and I can't pimp myself out every now and again.
If you enjoyed George on this episode,
listen to the next podcast. Yeah, exactly, because this is happening right now.
Keep it metal.
Always.
Wine Podcast, brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.